This is Mame Warren. Today is the 22nd of November, 1999. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland with Ann Clark. And I wanted to know about how you first got associated with Johns Hopkins. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay. I graduated from Ellicott City High School, but I was only 16. And the war, World War II was in full progress. I graduated in 42, and so I heard about my uncle was working down at Glenel Martin's Inn. We were producing planes for the Navy and for the British Air Force, and I liked to draw, and I was also enjoyed doing trigonometry. So. My uncle said, well, why don't you come down there? Well, Dad had to go to the city to get me a card because I was underage. So I started down there at 17, and I met other girls down there. And we did most of the updating of all the drawings that were made for the airplanes. And these girls came from Scranton, Pennsylvania, Oil City, Pennsylvania, Lynchburg, Virginia, and of course Baltimore. So the girls in Baltimore, we decided that when we finished, when the war was over, we would go to college. So we decided that Hopkins was the place for us. None of us really knew what we were going to do. We just knew that it was a good school. And I talked to my dad about it, and he said, yes, that's fine. And it was very convenient for me because I lived in Ellicott City. And going to Maryland, it was in College Park then, and it was too far away. So we all went down. We started in 1945. We registered. Well, first of all, we found out that we couldn't attend school until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because the only thing they had there was a school for teachers, and women weren't permitted on the campus until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So we all accepted that because women in those days were sort of second best. And so I started in, I took a full program, and it was very enjoyable. I really liked it, but I would have liked to have gone on with my drawing. I did take a night course there in drawing, and that was right during the war.
Now, do you mean mechanical drawing?
Yeah, mechanical drawing. And they used to teach it in the engineering department. And while I took it, and at that time, I thought I did a pretty good job because Dan and Martins, they thought I did a good job too. But there was another fellow there that was also taking the course. And he was a Japanese American, and he was a engineering student. And the fellow that was Mr. Farm, who was teaching the course, would only give us B's. He said that we could not have, there was no A students. And the Japanese gentleman was on a scholarship, and he was quite upset by not getting his A because he really did do a nice job. I didn't care. I figured, you know, women are not important. And so I didn't argue, but he was going to argue. And I thought that it was kind of slighted because of the war. Well, anyway, I went to, and so when I started in, I took the, my mother went over with me. And that time I was, Dr. Bamberger was my advisor. And she and my mother got together, and they decided, and they picked out what I was going to take the first year. And I just sat in the corner because there's no point in arguing with those two. They were two peas in a pod. So anyway, Mother always thought that I should be a secretary and drink tea just properly, because she'd always gone, she'd gone to young ladies' boarding school, and I should have been be the young lady's boarding school type, but I'm afraid I was like Dad. I was just a plain old New Englander. They couldn't see, had to be, just had to, I felt that I should work, and I just couldn't see just being an ornament. Anyway, so the first year was fine, and I took the basics. She picked out all the basics. And then, so the second year, I figured out, I thought I'd like to take, pursue the drawing. Well, I soon found out that I got as far as the algebra trigonometry course, but anything above that, forget it.
What do you mean, forget it?
Well, in other words, it wasn't open. You had to go to day school. Day school wasn't open. So anyway, I kept on with the night school. We started at 4 o'clock, and I had Dr. Moose was a political science instructor, and he was absolutely wonderful. He didn't just get up and lecture. He had us arguing and debating, because that was on Roosevelt's fourth term, and of course the term was over, but on whether he should have had a fourth term. In other words, and of course about that time, the Congress came and limited the term of office to 3 terms. But we debated whether the president couldn't go over two terms. So anyway, that was very good. I enjoyed that. And so I had to kind of stick to liberal arts or business. And so I stuck to as many liberal arts as I could. I took all the history courses they offered. And then I had to switch to business courses, and I took a political economy, which was good. That was good. But then I had accounting, which was horrible. In fact, I fired the teacher after we took our exam. So
it really was horrible.
It was horrible. So anyway, I got out in 4 years, and it was all right. It was in keeping with the codes of those days. And the professors, most of them, we were just so many freshmen or so many undergraduates. And of course, Hopkins in those days followed the German system of college, where the professor was all powerful and the students were bugs. And last spring I took a course over at the UMBC, a German history. And as my paper, I delved into German education. And I understand Hopkins' point of view a little bit better. the student was considered way beneath the professor. So they have since changed their perspective. They're getting more, we Americanized them. And things are a little more liberal. And the 60s came to Germany.
Tell me about the kinds of people who participated in McCoy College.
Well, I guess it was more just plain Baltimoreans. My friend, Leolia, she went to Eastern High School, and in fact, I think there was a couple girls from Western, and I don't remember anybody from out of state. I guess there was a girl from, I think, Forest Park that went there. But most of them that I knew had gone to school in Baltimore. They were Baltimoreans. I don't think any out of towners. And also, we had many returning GIs. that went there. And most of the Phillips, the GIs were, of course, weren't kids anymore. They had seen a lot, and they were quite mature. And it was a kind of a sobering atmosphere. It wasn't a rah-rah-rah college crowd. We were all mature individuals. So, and because of the war, that's what made it. We grew up pretty fast. Yeah. By the way, I still go to Hopkins. I take their Odyssey program there at night.
I'd like to talk about that too.
What's his face? Who's the fellow that heads up? Neiman? I can't think of the gentleman that's in charge of that.
Of the Odyssey program?
Yeah. He came from the Smithsonian.
Hmm.
Tall, fit, real tall, blonde-haired fella. Anyway, he was a... Well, anyway, he sets up the programs for the Odyssey, for the programs. Mm-hmm. And I went to their reunion over there, what was it, in the spring there. And I told him, they had one called Hotspots, and we had lectures on all the trouble spots around the world, and they were very good. They had some very good lectures, and I enjoyed that. But
tell me what the Odyssey program is.
Oh, well, it's an assortment of courses. It may like be a course on history of Baltimore. It could be we had one that where the various overseas reporters came in and told of their experiences. We had, as I said, lectures on the hot spots of the world, like Mexico, Indonesia, North Korea, and Afghanistan. And the fellow that taught the one on Afghanistan was born and raised there, and he was a member of the World Bank, or the IMF. And I would love to have him come back and talk about Central Asia. I have to go out and call up and see if I can rumble, get one on that, get him back. But he was good. But that's the type of thing. And also, they do have some language courses there, too, for people to take. And they also have an environmental program, too.
And who attends the Odyssey program?
Mostly mature people. I would say some of them are actually graduates of Hopkins. I mean, they've come back men that have regular careers and probably want to know about something, and they come back at night and hear whatever it is they were interested in. So I like it because it gets speakers from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I enjoy. So that's about it.
I took an Odyssey program this fall and really enjoyed it.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
What did you take?
It was called American Icons. And one of the reasons I was interested in it was that it was talking, the speakers were people who do interviews.
Oh,
and
I see.
So yeah. I thought I might pick up some tips.
Hey, that was great.
And,
it was
really quite an exciting group of people.
Well, I'm taking one right now. And it's taught by, he calls himself an architect, but he's an archaeologist, and he teaches over at College Park. And we had just had a lecture on Tunis, on Carthage and Tunis, and on how the Romans built the buildings over there. In other words, instead of just having the stone to hold the archway, which is usually a way of doing it, well, in Tunisia, not much stone, so they use sand, and they made concrete. And it shows how the Romans used that concrete to form their arches.
Hmm.
So
now, I also know, And I'm not sure how I know. Oh, I know how I know this. But anyway, I know you also took some classes with the Evergreen Society.
Oh, I took the first year that
and
I was.
I don't know what the Evergreen Society is. What's that?
That's for older people. Mm-hmm. In other words, mostly retirees. And they have a variety of courses. And we had one on the Big Bang Theory. And the guy that taught that was excellent.
Where are those classes taught?
Grace Methodist Church.
Grace Methodist Church.
On the corner of Charles and Northern Parkway. They used to call it Belvedere Avenue. It's Northern Parkway now.
Now, what's the difference between Evergreen and Odyssey?
Well, I don't know, to tell you the truth, because the Evergreen, they have theirs due on the day. It starts at 10, and two classes in the morning and two in the afternoon. And then they have, used to have an hour, but now it's half an hour for lunch. And see, they have, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think, up at Charles Street. And Wednesday is over in Columbia.
Well, that's probably the difference. Odyssey is an evening program.
Odyssey is an evening program. That's mm-hmm. basically, yeah. The Evergreen is more for people that want to know something, but their attention, they're older people that are not, for older people that are inactive, I guess you would call it. In other words, they play bridge and they go see things and all, but they're not actively in business or in getting a degree or anything of that program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get back to McCoy College.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are my representative of McCoy College.
Oh, I am. Okay.
And I want you to give me the feeling of McCoy College. I want you to take me with you to McCoy College. Describe what it was, what your day was like.
Well, let's see.
You were arriving at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's
right. Were you using the same classrooms that had been used?
No. It's like similar to what we have today out at Towson. In other words, you went to whichever building you had your course in. Now, I was trying to think, can't even think of the names of the buildings now. I took French, that was one of the things I had, and that was taught in Gilman. Most of the language courses were taught in Gilman. I had an art history class, and that was in Gilman in the basement. And of course the bookstore was in Gilman. Our history course was in the Morgenthaler in the Chem Lab. And English literature was also in Morgenthaler. The math class was over. I don't remember that one. Remsen, I guess it was. And let's see. But most things were in Gilman. The business courses, were up in Gilman. Oh, and economic geography was in some little house off the campus there somewhere. But and the biology, you see, that was in Morgenthaler also. That was the lab, too. Yeah.
So the classes started at 4 o'clock in the
afternoon?
4
o'clock, right.
So were the regular students flowing around? I mean, what was it like? Did a whole new group just come in and swarm over the campus? Were there many of you?
Oh, no. It would be like... you know, like people coming off from work would go there. My last year, I worked, and because I had gone to University of New Hampshire during the summer and taken some of my courses up there and transferred them down. So I worked, and so you just come off from work and take a course and go wherever it happened to be and take a course. So, just like you would go, that's why I put it in night school. It was like night school.
And how many classes could you get in a semester?
Well, you had one in before dinner, and then there was two after dinner, because it ran till, I think it's 10 after 10. There were two in the evening, so that's three. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And 5 nights a week?
And 5 nights a week, right.
And where would you eat dinner? How did you work that
out?
Oh,
they had a cafeteria. There's a cafeteria in
Levering Hall?
Levering Hall, yeah, down the basement. Yeah, that was very nice. And what am I thinking? Oh, yeah. And then we also went on Saturdays. Biology class was half a day Saturday.
And were you there in the mornings on Saturdays?
Yeah, Saturday morning.
So the Hopkins undergraduate students were there in the taking classes on Saturday mornings too. How did that work?
I think they were there. Yeah, but we didn't seem to mix. You know, they were there, but there was not that I remember any mixing of the two. I guess we all stayed together, our little gang.
And was McCoy College predominantly women? Or?
No. Now, like in English class, we only had one man. He was a GI. But in other classes I had a history class. It was about half and half. But the fellows were, on the whole, they were former GIs, yeah. So it was kind of half and half.
And the faculty, who were they?
Well, let's see, there was one woman, her name was Hatcher, and she was French, she taught French, and what else? And our English teacher was also a woman, and she was on contract, but she wasn't a regular member of the faculty. And I think all the rest of them were men. And all the rest of them, and most of them, and the men that we had, of course, were, they were regular, they were the faculty, or the regular faculty that taught in the day school. Yeah. They hadn't started to get into the contract people yet.
Now, were there any faculty members who really made an impression on you, who were very important to you?
Well, I told you, I liked Dr. Muse. Dr. Muse, he later became speechwriter for Eisenhower. And he was very good because he really tried to enthuse us in debating and issues. In other words, he was interested in his students. And then the other fellow, W.T. Rowell. I can't remember the first name. Well, anyway,
what's his last name?
Rowell. It's a picture of him down in the Gilman painting. R-O-W-E-L-L, Dr.
Okay. Rao.
Well, anyway, he was a general, he was a colonel or a lieutenant colonel, because he announced that one the first day. I am a lieutenant or a colonel, and I was in charge of getting the art objects that the Germans stole in Italy. Yes, sir. That's fine, sir. And he would walk in opened up his paper. This was in Muggenthaler, and the big auditorium in a kind of one of these dish-type auditoriums. And opened up his paper, look at everybody, proceed. And it sounded just like you turn on a record. And he got right through his essay, right through his speech, and then when he got through, closed the thing, turned around, walked out the door. Nobody would dare raise their hand and ask a question. Ooh, no way. Or you could hear a pin drop. And he had us completely. We were, yes, sir. And then,
was he an effective teacher?
I thought the lectures were very good. It was a regular lecture, and that was where my handwriting went to pot. I had to keep up with it. I wish I'd had a recorder under. I needed a recorder. But he was very good. I thought the lectures were excellent. But I wouldn't dare to ask him a question. Now, for a mark, for our grades, he would post them on the outside of his door frame there. You know, you go down, look for your name, there'd be the grade. My cousin tells me that's illegal now. So anyway, that's what he did. He gave us the first test we had. We had two tests, one in the middle and one at the end. So the first examination, he gave us two questions. And he said to answer the questions. Well, both of them had, I would call it $90 words in them. So I didn't know what they meant. I would never raise my hand and ask what they meant, because I didn't expect an answer. And so I figured out, well, let's see, we did the early Greeks, and then we started on the Romans, and I think the one sentence, one question is Roman and the other's Greek. Then I thought about it and thought about it. Then I thought, well, I think this one's going to be the Greek one. So I wrote everything I knew about the Greek history. Bit. I had it all down. I had Pericles. He was the greatest thing that ever walked. The second question, I said, well, it's got to be Roman. It's obvious it's got to be that. So I wrote everything I knew on that, and I got a B in the exam.
Well, it worked.
It worked. But you see, you should have been able to raise your hand and ask, which is what would happen today. But not in those days. No way.
So did you have a sense that you were attending Johns Hopkins University?
Well, I had a sense that I was attending a German school that wished to be exactly like Heidelberg. That was the thing that instilled in, I mean, that was the thing that drew us. Because in those days, German education was the education. So therefore, they tried to be like Heidelberg.
Now that's interesting to me, just in a sociological sense, that this was immediately after World War II. Was there any feeling about that, about it being,
no.
Should we be doing the German way?
No. In fact, it went on like that until the 60s. The 60s, when the baby boomers came along, that all went out the window, you know. And Martin Luther King and all that. See, that's what happened. No, education in the early days was very strict. And, I mean, it wasn't just here. It was all over. That's why you don't have, we never had all this stuff that goes on in schools today. They had, I came went out to a little country high school out here in Ellicott City. And, of course, the principal knew me, knew my mother, knew my father, knew my aunts. He knew the whole family. So, I mean, and he knew everybody. I mean, he knew where they lived, all their names, all their relatives, everything. So if they had a problem, he simply called up father and tell him that so-and-so is causing a disturbance. And that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's none of, and also the schools, that if we had one boy there that was kind of disrupting the school, and he was expelled. Didn't take him long. He, out the door he went. Fast.
Did, I guess what I'm trying to get straight in my mind is, did you have a sense that you were attending Johns Hopkins or that you were attending McCoy College or both? Or how did that work?
I would say the university. I mean, in other words, McCoy College was simply a night school of the other. That's all. I mean, that's what we figured. In other words, we were going to Hopkins like everybody else, but we just couldn't go and sit with the boys. So it was to us a night school. That's all it was, just a night school.
Okay. Now, did they make any attempt at creating any kind of social life for you?
Not that I know of.
Were there any dances, or did any of the females who attended McCoy College wind up dating Hopkins people?
No, not that I know of. Now, my friend Lelia, she did meet somebody, and she married a fellow who works. He's retired now, but he worked for the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. And he was a grad student. He graduated from Hopkins. But she didn't meet him through the school. She met him after she graduated. So, I mean, it wasn't, there was no intermingling between the day students and us. We were just, well, we were the hired help. I mean, it was kind of like that, you know. Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of teachers in your program, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, we had mostly all regular. Towards the end, they brought in contract people. But most all of them that taught us were members of the regular faculty.
No, I meant students. Weren't there a lot of people who were teachers by day who were taking night classes?
We didn't have, I don't remember, many mature students.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking? They would have been in the master's program and you were in the undergraduate program.
Yeah, we were, they probably were. Mm-hmm. But we were all, I guess about, regular high school students, I mean, former high school. Yeah. And of course the GIs that came out. Yeah. But there weren't, we didn't have any I remember any mature students in class. Mm-hmm. No.
Now, were there any people behind the scenes who made a difference to you? Anybody you can think of who impressed you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the registrar, and I can't remember her name.
Oh, Irene somebody?
Yeah, she was so prim and so proper, but a wonderful person. She knew everybody. She was the type you had, because when I wouldn't pick up, well, you can't do this, and she'd know that you couldn't do that, and you couldn't do this, and, oh yeah, well that'd be very good. And she was kind of misinformation. Yeah, very good. When she, I think she left before we did. And we all missed her because she seemed to know, she was very well organized.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, she had a lot of people to take care of,
that's
didn't
right.
she?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it was, but it wasn't out of the ordinary, in the sense of like being strict and all, because that was what it was like before the 60s. Yeah. And, oh, I know another guy was good I liked was McDougall. He taught sociology. He taught us. He taught at Goucher, and he taught at Morgan State. And he was a pre-runner to Martin Luther. In other words, he used to tell us that all the students at Morgan State had paid their dues, everything was financially perfect, that they'd all, and that they, and he was, I mean, he was, said that the school was well run, and they were getting a very good education there. And he was quite impressed with it. So that was another thing that went on. Yeah, he was very broad-minded type of person. Yeah.
What do you think was the most important lesson you learned at Johns Hopkins?
I would say I wouldn't want to attend a German university. No way. No, I think that was the thing. There was a lack of freedom. You felt like, well, the whole city was that way, though, because the work I did, it was very hard to get a job because I only could only work it at Martin's or Bendix's. In other words, nobody else would hire women in engineering. So I had two choices. So I had been to Martin's. Some mother says, "Well, why didn't you try Bendix's? It's just up the street." And I went there, and I was hired. There were 6 of us. The old man hired 6 of us. And old Mr. Burns, and he was very nice. But we were the only ones, and Martin's would hire women too, they hired, but nobody else.
Now, did you wind up with an engineering degree?
No, I got my degree with the call the grandfather's clause. In other words, you've been in the business so long that you automatically got one. Oh. I didn't take any paper, but I had so much experience.
So what was your major at Hopkins?
History.
History, okay.
Yeah, history and business. I tried it. I went we had a Matheson Chemical Company moved down from 42nd Street to Baltimore. And the fellow that was the president decided that he wanted to raise horses. And he bought himself a place out in the Worthington Valley. And he had a horse farm. And so he moved the company down and he bought 10 Light Street, the skyscraper there. And so some of the people came. Like heads of departments came down, but the others he had to hire off the street. Well, the gal that had the job of doing the charts and the statistical work for the company didn't want to come. So I went down and I applied for a job there. And so they thought, well, I was right around school, that'd be a nice business degree. So I said, yeah, okay. So I joined it. Of course, it was paying only high for what I was getting in engineering. And so anyway, I thought, well, I'll see what business is like. Well, it was a lovely, I was up on Mahogany Row, and we did, we had, the information that we gathered was secret. In other words, how much you made on each ton of so-and-so. And it was, and they did hydroxides, ammonia, and had 3 plants, Saltsville, and Lake Charles, and Niagara Falls. And so I did the charts and did all the things, and you get it to the, all the executives. They have five of them up there. And so so was working on Mahogany Row and getting the information out of the finance department. And it was all right. It was kind of boring after a while. And so I just, so I stayed a year. And I told Mom I couldn't take that. That's just dumb. So then I had a choice. At Martin's, I could go back, or I could get a Bendix, and I went to Bendix.
Well, we're getting away from Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there anything else we should talk about? Anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to tell me about
Hopkins? No, I
can't
think of anything. I mean, as far as I was concerned, the education was adequate, you know, and in all, but I think that I resented not being able to take what I wanted to. I think that was the big thing. And of course, that was a reflection on the times, because nobody else could either, you know, none of us did. We all ended up, like my friend Lily, she ended up in, you know, she took English and business, and I took history and business. So it was just the times. It was, women weren't considered, I mean, they were considered housewives, or to be housewives. And, you couldn't do what you wanted to do, you know. And, so that's what it was. It was a time. But I did go back. I went back one time. I tried teaching, and I did take a course there. The 12 credits you needed to teach. And I took those, but I also took along with them engineering psychology. I mean, human factors engineering, you know, how high the chair should be and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Man was, Dr. Chapanis was taught it, and he was working on the NASA project that was putting John Glenn in space. I couldn't figure out just how he should lay in the capsule to shoot him off. So I enjoyed that. That was really great. And so I got the engineer, the teaching thing, and then I thought, most of well, what you put that? Nope, I'm sorry, I have to go back.
I think you are an engineer at heart.
I love it. My dad was too. Yeah.
Well, I really want to thank you. This has taught me a lot. It's given me a good feeling for what McCoy College was like.
Yeah, right. It was just a product of the times. You know, that's what it was. And I'll say this, that we could have asked questions depending on the professor, like the psychology professor. He was fine. And Dr. Moose was fine. I mean, he encouraged us to ask questions. But there were the others that followed the German way.
Okay, well, we're at the end of the tape. So
oh,
I think I'm going to stop now, okay?
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to take this off.